Sit, Stay, Ride, The Story of America's Sidecar Dogs is a documentary that explores the quirky, fascinating world of motorcyclists who have sidecars and love to ride with their dogs in those sidecars. WMNF is presenting the Florida premiere of Sit, Stay, Ride in a one-night-only screening July 28th at Tampa Picture Show, where you can eat a meal or have a drink while watching the film. This movie is a must-see for dog lovers. Tickets are just $10, and you can get them for more information at WMNF.org.
Like an animal, talks like an animal, must be an animal, come hear the animal, talking animal, talking animal. Walks like an animal, talks like an animal, must be an animal.
Good morning. This is Talking Animals, an all canine edition of Talking Animals, as it turns out. I'm Duncan Strauss, and my guests today are J.D. Whitaker and Rhonda Reynolds, both motorcyclists with sidecars who ride with their dogs in those sidecars. Whitaker and Reynolds are two of the 18 sidecar enthusiasts featured in Sit, Stay, Ride, The Story of America's Sidecar Dogs, a documentary exploring the colorful subculture of these canine-loving motorcyclists, which WNF is screening next Tuesday, July 28th at Tampa Picture Show. More details on that in a moment, including how you can win a pair of tickets. Whitaker, who lives in North Carolina, has a particularly intriguing story, riding with his dog Hercules, his third sidecar dog, by the way, to honor a military dog handler who was assassinated. Reynolds hails from Wisconsin, travels with her dog Mulu, and they both seem to revel in riding in snowy conditions and enjoying all sorts of outdoor adventures. We'll hear their stories, how they entered the sidecar dog world, what they love about it, details about their dogs, the movie, and more when we speak of J.D. Whitaker and Rhonda Reynolds in a few moments here on Talking Animals. Also later in this canine-centric show, featuring dog songs, a dog comedy piece, and so on, for the prize and Name That Animal Tune, I'll be offering a pair of tickets to the screening of Sit, Stay, Ride. WNF is showing the movie its Florida premiere. In fact, in a one-night-only screening, July 28th, 1 week from yesterday, a Tampa Picture Show. If you're a dog person at all, you're a person who will absolutely love this film. Also, a reminder about the theater. They have a restaurant and full bar, so you can order a meal and or a drink, and they're adding a veggie burger to the menu that night at their behest. Tickets to the movie are just $10, and you can get those tickets or more information at the splendid new WMNF.org. Have you seen the new website? Yikes, fab. Fantastic. Or call 813-238-8001 and speak with Miss Julie. Tickets will also be available at the door that night. Again, this is a fundraiser for WMNF. Additionally, later in today's program, I'll speak briefly with Scott Trebatusky, director of the Hillsborough County Pet Resource Center, about the center's event August 1st, the one-year anniversary of First Saturday Celebration. A couple of programming notes. This Friday, the fabulous Flea will be sitting in for the fabulous Joellen on Art in Your Ear, and the show will include a rebroadcast of my February interview with Eric Christow, the director of Sit, Stay, Ride. That's Friday at 1 p.m. with Flea here on WMNF. Also, in a move of questionable judgment for all parties, I'm being allowed to sit in for Joyce on the Tuesday It's the Music, next Tuesday, July 28th, from 1 to 3:30 p.m. Before we speak with J.D. and Rhonda, let's hear a dog song. It's from John Hyatt, and with the scenes he's describing in the song, I have really more to do with going on walks. The emotion seems very much in keeping with the spirit of sidecar dogs and their riders. This is John Hyatt with My Dog and Me on Talking Animals.
She marked our trail up the backbone ridge. How many times can one dog pee? Keeps me high as an eagle when I'm on the skids. I guess you gotta come down eventually. Buddy, I could have gone that extra mile. Bark or an extra smile, 'cause I never felt so free. It was just my dog and me. Then she gives me that look like she'd lay down her life. No doubt she would in a minute, man. She'd face the bullet. She faced the knife just to keep my butt from the frying pan. Now she's running. love I had to chase someday comes back to tell me that the coast is clear. It's a different world I see when it's just my dog and me. To the birds in the trees, why it's just my dog and me. It's nice and easy down the devil's back. She wouldn't know any other way. Now it's over that ridge for one last mile, and we're fast asleep by the fireside, dreaming these dreams for free. Yeah, it's just my dog and me. I never felt so free. It's just my dog and me.
That's Sean Hyatt with My Dog and Me, a fitting song as we prepare to discuss dogs, freedom, motorcycles, sidecars, and sidecar dogs, of course. With a reminder that I invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663, emailing us at dj@wmnf.org, or texting 813-433-0885. Let's welcome J.D. Whitaker and Rhonda Reynolds to Talking Animals. Good morning, J.D. Good morning, Rhonda.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us on Talking Animals today. And I think we should start at the beginning, at least the beginning of your sidecar lives. Rhonda, let's start with you. When did you first get a sidecar, and what prompted it?
You know, I got it first about 3 years ago, and what prompted it was Mulu. I knew that I was going to have a dog, and I let her get to be about 9 months or so, and then sent my motorcycle out to Washington State, had a sidecar added to it. I flew out there, brought it back, and started to introduce Mulu to it. So the sidecar was purchased because of Mulu.
But that seems like we may or may not be skipping over one or two things. I mean, were you a motorcyclist prior to that and said, hey, now that I have this dog Mulu, I'm going to become a sidecar person? I mean, what was your background with motorcycles or related vehicles?
I probably had been riding motorcycles solo, you know, on two wheels for about 15 years. And I knew that every time I'd take for a ride, I'd have to leave my dog behind. And so I thought that when I got Mulu, I made a commitment to change the way I did things so that I could incorporate her more into my life and the things I enjoyed doing. So that was part of it. I think it was just the fact that I hated to leave the dog behind when I went out for a ride. So I said, if I had a sidecar, Mulu can come along.
Well, one of the things I want to get into with you and JD in a moment or two is the whole idea that of dogs that really take to sidecars and some that maybe aren't quite as enthusiastic, as it turns out. But before we do that, let's bring JD into the conversation. So JD, let's start in much the same way. When did you first get interested in a sidecar, and what grabbed you about it?
In 1993, I was working over in Egypt on a government program, and we had our system spread out over about 40 acres in the desert, and it was difficult to get around, especially when you had to move test equipment, because test equipment weighing 100 pounds or more and costing many thousands of dollars. And they had rules. You couldn't have private vehicles inside the compound. So we had to wait until we had transportation. It was really a tedious exercise to try to get test equipment moved from one location to the other. So they offered me a sidecar to move the test equipment around with, and I fell in love with it. It was a Russian military sidecar.
And so at that point, it was obviously just much more a matter of sort of practicality, just sort of getting in and around those areas with that equipment.
Yeah, and, you know, it seems like a small vehicle, but you know, when you're not carrying a passenger, you can put a lot of stuff in the sidecar.
And then I think in the film you say that, on the other hand, you'd been riding motorcycles for pretty much all your life. So was this an easy adjustment to make, or you're just so happy to have a way to haul around the equipment that you just jumped right into the sidecar world?
Well, I didn't have anybody to mentor me on the sidecar. Nobody knew how to ride it. It had been sitting there for years. I actually had to do some work on it before we could get it on the road. But, I was self-taught, and it wasn't that hard to pick up. It's very different than riding a motorcycle, but the controls are the same.
That's one of my sort of many questions about this that I think other people would be interested in, too, is how does it differ? How does riding a motorcycle that does have a sidecar differ notably, at least, from just a motorcycle alone? Either of you, by the way, can answer.
Go ahead, JD.
A motorcycle always wants to go straight. A sidecar has to be steered to go straight. You never get to really relax at the controls. You're always piloting this lopsided three-wheeled vehicle.
So it'll just veer off on one side or the other in the absence of that kind of control.
Well, yeah. If you accelerate it, the sidecar wants to drag you to the right.
Mm-hmm.
And when you decelerate, it wants to push you to the left.
I also found that turning was the biggest thing I had to learn, and that is the leaning and being very, very careful, especially of right-hand turns, lest you want to raise the sidecar into the air on a right-hand turn. And Mulu serves a good purpose for me as a beginning sidecarist. She provides about 70 pounds of ballast out there that helps that from not occurring if I take a corner too fast.
Yeah, but it really does sound like there is something to, whether you've been riding motorcycles for a long time or not, really something to be said for learning. And one thing you said in the film, JD, that I think you just said here a moment ago too, is that it's really more a matter of piloting this as opposed to riding or driving, which would otherwise be the words you would use on just a regular conventional motorcycle.
Absolutely.
So here's the thing. So obviously, Rhonda, you got your sidecar expressly to bring Mulu on your adventures and on your road and not leave her alone. So clearly, you might have had dogs before, I'm guessing, but that was your first sidecar, and therefore Mulu is your first sidecar dog. Is that correct?
That is correct.
But were you a dog person for some time before that?
My whole life.
So what made you think, okay, this time when Mulu enters my life, I'm going to get a sidecar to sort of coincide with Mulu's arrival in my life?
Well, I guess as I look back over the dogs I've had growing up, there was a lot of activities that I engaged in that I incorporated the dogs into them. And as I started to get a little older and committed to another dog in my life, I also committed to doing the things that I could do with her as much as possible. So in addition to the rowing out in the water or backpacking or winter camping, all of those things, I just said, I think I could really enjoy, even though it's a different type of experience than riding on two wheels, I could enjoy bringing Mulu along with my camping gear and taking her out on short trips, weekends or week-long trip, where we do the things that I enjoy and that Mulu enjoys, which is camping and canoeing and boating and things like that, and just bring her along more often rather than having to leave her home.
Interesting, though, because it really sounds like kind of a big sort of leap in faith, even though that all makes sense the way you explain it just sounds like you'd had this history of doing these activities, you'd had this history of riding motorcycles, but somehow when Mulu was about to enter the picture, you said, hey, you know what, I'm just going to jump into the sidecar world.
I did, and it was a little scary. I wasn't sure, obviously, whether she was going to take to it. I'd heard stories that some dogs simply don't like the noise or the motion, but when she was very young, I started to just let her jump into it. When I first brought the sidecar home, I would give her a treat every time she jumped up into it. I'd praise her, and pretty soon I'd find myself walking out to the garage, and there would be Mulu sitting in the sidecar just waiting for something to happen.
All right, so she really took to it. So JD, so from what you described with your first sidecar experience really being to sort of make it a little bit easier to haul the equipment around, was the next step from there a sidecar that involved a sidecar dog, or was there something sort of in between?
Well, I was a single parent, and when I got back to California, I knew I wanted a sidecar, and I started building one, the one I have now, the one that was in the film.
Mm-hmm.
But it's quite an undertaking to build one up from scratch, especially if you're going to convert it to car tires. And I got impatient, and I found a used Goldwing AML, so I bought that, and it was ready to go. So I started riding with with both kids and the dog in the sidecar at the same time.
And as much as I've been trying to get steeped in the sidecar world, I'm not hip enough to know that reference. So what the thing that you, when you got impatient that you bought was what exactly? Sorry.
It was a got it from the Netherlands called EML. They used to import kits. They were the best engineered sidecar kit that was available. See, back in the 1990s, you could still buy brand new Harley from sidecar from Harley Davidson. They no longer manufacture them except for the Washington D.C. police force. And the Urals were just entering the market, and they weren't too reliable, and they couldn't really handle our highway speeds at the time. They can now. But, the creme de la creme of sidecar was an EML conversion. You could convert Goldwings, BMWs, several other motorcycles, and it was a complete front tire to back tire conversion. You got car tires, car wheels, brake modifications, leading lift front end, everything you need to have a high-performance sidecar, which puts you in the three-wheel sports car category.
Sounds like you're much more brushing up into a car than a motorcycle at that point with all those modifications. So you get back, you get the EML, you get rolling, and you're taking your kids. At what point did a dog for you enter the sidecar?
This first ride. My daughter didn't want to leave without her dog. Sidecar dog number one was half Shar Pei and half Lab, weighed about 40 pounds. Her name was Asia, and my daughter wasn't going to go anywhere without her dog. So she just hopped in the sidecar and off it went.
It sounds like in both of your guys' case, sidecar dog number one, JD, I think there's one along the way out of the three that maybe didn't take you quite as well. But that's what I was kind of curious about is it sounds like for both of you, at least the adjustment and acclimation was brief. They just jumped in the sidecar and were content with it. There wasn't really an acclimation process necessary. Is that right? Because it sounds like people have various experiences with their sidecar dogs.
Yeah, in the case of Mulu.
Sorry, go ahead. Go ahead.
Mulu, it was instantaneous. I could tell that she enjoyed it. I could tell that she, she wanted to go for rides. So it was just a very smooth process to up to the 6-7 hours per day riding with appropriate brakes and stuff. She still enjoys it.
Let me let folks know this is Talking Animals. If you just tuned in, my guests are Rhonda Reynolds and J.D. Whitaker, two of the motorcyclists with sidecars and sidecar dogs, of course, featured in Sit, Stay, Ride, The Story of America's Sidecar Dogs, a wonderful documentary delving up for screening next Tuesday, July 28th at Tampa Picture Show and a fundraiser for the station. If you'd like to ask J.D. or Rhonda a question or offer a comment, please call 813-239-9663, email dj at wmnf.org, or text 813-433-0885. So your answer, J.D., to that question was depends on the dog. So is it strictly a temperament issue as to the dogs that don't respond the way that so far we're hearing that the dog number one and Mulu have?
Some dogs have, it depends on how they've been raised, what they've been exposed to in their early lives. A lot of rescue dogs, are a little bit on the fearful side, so you have to have a very gentle introduction. And what I'd recommend for somebody that wasn't sure that their dog would take to it right away is just let the dog get used to being in the sidecar, as Rhonda suggested, where it's just parked, it's not moving, it's not running, and you reward the dog for getting in the sidecar.
And then
once you become perfectly comfortable with that, then you can start the motor. You don't move the bike, but you start the motor, and then you get them used to moving around in the bike without the motor running, and then eventually you can put all three of them together. But you just got to wait until the dog is ready to get out on the road, and you can tell. When they stop being nervous and anxious,
sure,
you're ready to go.
And again, it seems like from what I gather from the film that a lot of dogs, including in your case, Asia and Mulu, Rhonda, didn't really even have that initial anxiety. They just sort of were game for it right from the get go. JD, tell me a little bit about. I can only assume it was sidecar dog number two that wasn't quite as enthusiastic compared to numbers one and three.
Sidecar dog number two was half Chow, half German Shepherd, and she was an adult dog when I inherited her when my mom passed. And she had spent her whole life living out the tree off leash, and she was my mom's dog, and Chows don't automatically take to a new owner. She had she had a lot of trust issues when she first came back home with me. And it took quite a bit to get her used to the sidecar. I had to go through the whole familiarization process of getting her in the sidecar, getting her comfortable just hanging out in the sidecar while I was tinkering with it, and then moving it around without the motor running and eventually starting it up. But even then, it took her several months before she was really comfortable and anxious to ride. She was eager to ride, I should say. But once she got used to it, she was just as eager to ride as any other dog.
Oh, okay, so she did come around that fully. I guess I somehow had thought that the number two just never quite embraced it quite as much, but it sounds like that eventually did happen.
Didn't embrace it as fast, but eventually she was more than happy to go.
Great. Okay, so I guess it's only fitting that we hear about number three and the current one. Tell me a little bit about Hercules. How long has he been in your life? Where did you meet him? And did he jump right into, once he came home with you, did he immediately become a sidecar dog?
Yeah, I got Hercules when he was 8 months old. He was gifted to me by my daughter, who had moved out to Michigan to go to college. And she, you know, when I lost Smokey, I wasn't really ready for another dog. But my daughter thought I should have another dog. She'd never known me not to have a dog. But I was just going to take some time before I got another dog. And she bought this boxer puppy and raised him for 8 months, and then asked me if I'd watch him for a while, so she went for a new apartment. And 3 months later, I called her and told her she wasn't going to get that dog back. That's when she told me she bought him for me in the first place.
I see.
But he at 8 months old, he needed no acclimation at all. He just jumped in the sidecar, took right to the doggles, never had any issues about him wanting to go anywhere. He'd chase me down the road if I left without him.
I'm sure he'd be mad as hell. Well, it sounds like your daughter did buy Hercules for you. We should mention, as you kind of alluded to a moment ago, JD, that it seems like the vast preponderance of the dogs featured in Sit, Stay, Ride are rescue dogs. Just seems like that. In fact, that's becomes a bit of a theme in the film, that most seem to be rescue dogs that were adopted and, again, to varying degrees, eased into the sidecar world or jumped right in. So let's talk about, I'm sure, an inevitable question that guys must always be asked, and I think people hearing about this maybe for the first time would be inclined to also wonder. Let's talk a little bit about safety. So what's involved with keeping the dog safe, and what are the safety concerns for a sidecar dog? Rhonda, why don't you go ahead first?
Well, I look at it in as three components that relate to safety. One would be the whether or not you harness your dog into the sidecar, and there are some differing opinions on that, whether or not the harness should be attached to something that can break away in the event of an accident to allow the dog to jump free. There's the other aspect is eye protection. That's where these doggles come in, and getting dogs used to wearing some sort of eye protection. And then the next one would be heat and cold, so jackets, coats, some sort of way to protect them from the elements in a long ride. So with Mulu, I've got her chained in. She wears a harness with a chain that attaches to her breast hook, and then she wears the doggles. But lately I've found another product that is a bit of a mesh made by the same company, but it's not plastic, it's not hard, it's more of a mesh mat that allows airflow to come through, and I find that she finds those a bit more comfortable than the plastic ones, because on a long ride she'll sometimes start pawing at the doggles, and I have to kind of reach over and readjust them. But those are the three areas I think have to do with safety for the dog on a sidecar.
And we should point out for people who are listening and might be hearing or mishearing, yes, she's saying doggles. Those are the goggles that are for these sidecar dogs, and very, very striking looking and very jaunty looking in some cases. But so with the harness, Rhonda, I mean, are they like, is Mulu like, you know, pretty much set in there, or is there sort of a breakaway feature? I mean, how do you balance the idea between something that might grab her eye and she might want to jump out? I don't know if that would be a squirrel or something if you're going slow enough as you're on the road, versus having the ability to release easily if needed. How does that work with those harnesses?
That is the $64,000 question there. Right now, Mulu is attached to the sidecar with a chain and a hook so that she cannot break free. You know, I think eventually what I would like to do, maybe as Mulu gets a little older and a little calmer, is to maybe go to something that will allow her to break free. I know that one of the gentlemen in the movie, Drone, Ned, out in Washington, has designed a system that allows his dog to break free in the event of an accident, which he did experience while on a ride with his dog.
Yeah.
And so that's something I'm looking for. But right now, I think it's more important to keep her in the sidecar, because we do have a lot of distractions up here. As I'm running through the woods, there's deer and bear and all sorts of things that she sees and gets excited about. And I just want to make sure that she's in that sidecar first and foremost.
Sure. And JD, how about you? What kind of safety precautions does Hercules enjoy?
He's got a heavy duty elastic leash that hooks onto the top of his harness, and I've got it secured around the, you know, where the left shoulder area is on the the back seat of the sidecar. And I'm sure it would, you know, given enough force, it would tear free. But I've never tested to see how much force it takes. But I'm confident that if, you know, we had a really bad accident, that he would, that harness arrangement would let go. It was designed to hold a dog purely in the back seat of a car. But, you know, the bottom line is, with motorcycles, versus sidecars, there's, you know, you have to manage your risk. And if you're going to be overly concerned about safety, you know, you should be in a Volvo. you know, there's just as many ways to get in trouble with the sidecar as there is in a motorcycle, but there are much fewer ways to get out of trouble. So you have to keep that in mind. The responsibility for safety is really, it's the rider.
Yeah.
You know, you can't engineer safety into any kind of a system. And sidecars don't have seatbelts or airbags, and thank God they're not required. They're not overly regulated, so I find that attractive as well. You know, it's you've got so little latitude to exercise your own judgment that we're a lot of people that are growing up in this well-regulated society have lost the ability to use their judgment, and they have no common sense.
Go ahead, sorry.
So, you know, I think you have to keep safety in mind as you operate the machine. You're invisible. You have to end your invisible and ride accordingly.
Well, one thing, I mean, to a person of the folks interviewed in the film, I mean, of course, first of all, they're all passionate about their dogs, so they're incredibly protective of their dogs. So there's tremendous precautions taken. You know, it varies from rider to rider, but it does seem like no one's obviously remotely casual, cavalier about it. It's like, hey, I want to make sure the dog's protected. In some cases, they have two dogs in their sidecar, et cetera, and there's a lot of care put into it. So, it's, JD, at one point in the movie, you say something to the effect that riding with Hercules feels so great and powerful that it's a wonder that they haven't made it against the law to ride with your dog in the sidecar. So, for both of you, I'd like to ask, what is it that makes it so special? What's it like for you? And, Rhonda, maybe why don't you go first on that one?
Okay. You know, I think one of the most amazing things that I experienced when I first started riding with Mulu was the watching other people, either pedestrians or in other vehicles, and how they would almost immediately break out into a great big smile. and that was something that just made me feel really good. You could tell that they enjoyed seeing the dog in the sidecar. They enjoyed seeing the dog with goggles on and people taking movies and photos, and gas station stops extend into the half-hour mark, sometimes with people just coming up, taking pictures, petting Mulu, kids getting in the sidecar with Mulu to have their picture taken. It's just a very joyful thing to see and to experience when you're riding around with a dog.
And just the riding itself for you, I guess, just to be sort of on the open road, and obviously we see in the film that you do a lot of outdoor camping. There's a lot of sort of snowy adventures that you and Mulu are on, and it just, I guess, makes it just that much better to be out and camping and doing whatever else you're doing with Mulu at your side.
Yeah, exactly. In the spring and summer and fall, loading up a tent and Mulu for a weekend expedition in some of the forest roads up here, just very, very pleasant. We set up camp and then we'll take off. We'll ride the roads for a while and come back and do some hiking. And it's just a very fun way to travel.
So, JD, how about by comparison, what's sort of so great and powerful about the sidecar dog experience for you?
You know, everything that Rhonda said, you know, it brings a smile to everybody's face. You know, you can, I see kids straining around to look behind them, and cars constantly maneuvering to get alongside so they can get pictures, so they can get their pictures of the the cool dog in the sidecar. And as Philippe Murat said, you know, you don't want to go anywhere without your dog. And then it's just so cool. And it is. It's the coolest thing that you can do. I mean, there's not much else. There's not much else that I can think of that is universally appealing to, you know, people in general. Everywhere I go, everywhere we go, there's a sidecar delay factor. You're not gonna get anywhere fast because everybody wants to talk to you.
I'm sure. Yeah. Any stop you make, whether it's for gas or whatever the reason, I'm sure you have to build in X amount of extra minutes, knowing that people are gonna want to chat, take pictures, etc. In fact, I want to get into that a little bit with you in a sec, JD. But let me just let folks know again. I'm Duncan Strauss. I'm speaking with Rhonda Reynolds and JD Whitaker, two of the Sidecar Dog writers featured in Sit, Stay, Ride: The Story of America's Sidecar Dogs, a wonderful documentary. WNF is screening next Tuesday, July 28th, at Tampa Picture Show. It's a fundraiser for WNF, and tickets are available at WMNF.org by calling 813-238-8001 or at the door that night. To join the conversation, we just have a couple minutes left, really. Please call 813-239-9663, email dj@WMNF.org, or text 813-433-0885. So, JD, beyond the fun and the smiles and whatever, I mean, let's talk a little bit about something more that's going on with you. Basically, you're sort of writing with a purpose. Maybe you could talk a little bit about the Tour of Honor and what that involves and who that's honoring.
Yeah, I got involved with Tour of Honor after I originally got involved with the Patriot Guard. Patriot Guard riding to the airport and you know, greeting soldiers when they're coming back, and you know, standing a flag line when, you know, we lose one of our precious World War II vets, and so on and so forth. I was doing a lot of writing with military veterans, and I found out about the Tour of Honor the very first year it launched in 2011, and I thought, no, this sounds like fun. And as I got into it, and I had done quite a bit of endurance riding in my younger days, 1,000 miles in 24 hours, Iron Butt Association type rides, California 24. And they were all charity events. And when I started riding getting ready to ride the Tour of Honor, you know, I noticed that there were two groups of people. Some people just wanted to ride and rack up their Iron Butt point. There were quite a few people that were there for the same reason I was, that they wanted to honor somebody. And it was usually a family member. And I was the first one in my family to serve since Civil War. So I didn't have anybody in my immediate family to dedicate my ride to. And coincidentally, Lance Corporal Colton Russ was killed by a sniper in Afghanistan in the month before I was ready to go ride my first Tour of Honor. So I had a friend paint a tribute on the trunk lid, and that shows up in the movie as well. And since that time, Hercules and I, combination of Tour of Honor and Patriot Guard and American Legion Riders and Combat Veterans Events and just general riding, we've racked up 80,000 miles riding Tour of Honor and associated veterans community service type stuff.
Yeah. And we should note that Lance Corporal Rusk, part of the reason, or maybe a large reason that you selected him to honor, is that he was a military dog handler.
That's right. Somebody brought him to my attention and said, hey, do you know about this? His story just tore my heart out.
Yeah. In the film, it's really clear you feel a very, very strong emotional connection to Lance Corporal Rusk and his story. Yeah, I guess we should note that as part of the tour, that as we discussed earlier, people often want to stop and take pictures or ask about the dog or ask about the sidecar. And I guess in this case, you just sort of say, hey, that's fine, but I'd like you to take a picture of the trunk lid, which does honor Lance Corporal Rusk, and post that on Facebook or other social media just so that he continues to be honored in all kinds of ways.
Yes. That's a condition. When people ask me, you know, when we're out riding and they ask me, can I take a picture of the dog? You know, I'll either orient him around so he's facing the trunk lid, or I'll ask them if they'd take a picture of the trunk lid too. And there's rarely enough time in a crowded stop to tell everybody the story, but it keeps his memory alive.
Yeah. Absolutely. Well, we just got maybe a minute or so left here. Rhonda, let me ask you, in the film, you share an observation that really struck me, that dogs are with us such a short time, relatively speaking, so it's all the more important to you to give Mulu these kind of wonderful sidecar adventures, camping in the woods, etc. It's almost like an unspoken bucket list that you've sort of devised for Mulu in that way. Would that be a reasonable assessment?
Oh, that'd be accurate. Absolutely. You know, I've had, like I said, dogs my whole life, and when I think back on their lives, you know, they, you know, in some cases lived to 16 years old, and I think back all of the experiences I had, and that's one reason why since I lost my previous two dogs, I spent about a year or two without dogs, similar to a little bit what JD went through, and I finally just decided, you know, I just need another dog in my life, and when I did make that decision, I just wanted to say as much. I want to include her in my life as much as possible. Almost everything I did. For example, I liked to canoe a lot. And I don't know, Mula didn't take to the canoe too much. It was a little too tippy. So I decided, well, I'll get a rowboat. And a rowboat is the perfect platform. And it allows me to take her out rowing every day. We go on extended trips in Lake Superior or Voyageur National Park, load the gear up in the boat, and Mulu's there, stable platform, and stay on island. So it's just a, you know, it's another way of just making sure that I incorporate her into almost everything I do.
So even if Mulu doesn't know about the bucket list, she's reaping the benefits of it.
She's in the bucket.
Yeah, that's great. Okay, we have just about reached the end of our time now. We've been speaking with J.D. Whitaker and Ron Reynolds, two of the sidecar dog enthusiasts, to say the least, that are featured in Sit, Stay, Ride, The Story of America's Sidecar Dogs, the documentary that WNF will be screening next Tuesday, July 28th at Tampa Picture Show. The movie screens at 7:30. Tickets are $10. You can get them at WMNF.org by calling here and speaking with Miss Julie, 813-238-8001, or you can get them at the door. And again, it's a fundraiser for WMNF. So JD and Rhonda, thank you so much for making the time to join us on Talking Animals. Loved the film. Loved speaking with you today as well. So thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
You're very welcome.
Bye-bye. In a moment, I'll speak briefly with Scott Trebatusky, director of the Hillsborough County Resource Center, about a big anniversary event they have coming up August 1st. Right now, it's time to step into the Talking Animals Comedy Corner. This, too, is dog-oriented, of course. It's Greg Fitzsimmons with a piece called A Humane Society on Talking Animals.
So we rescued a puppy, which is great. You've rescued a puppy before. Okay, beautiful. It's a great thing. Millions of dogs are put to sleep every year because there's not enough homes. And you go in, and you're a hero. You go save one. You walk in there, and you think it's going to be easy. They're like, I'll take that one. They're like, oh, not so fast, asshole. First, you got to fill out this 28-page application. Right? Name, social security number. If you and your wife divorce, who gets custody of the dog? I don't know. We never talked about it. Thanks for planting that seed for us. And then they set up a home inspection. I'm not making this up. Literally, woman shows up to my house. Clipboard, little beard, light beard. Didn't see it at first. And now she's looking around my house while I stand out front waiting. Just nervous that she's going to come out and be like, yeah, we're just going to go ahead and kill the dog. This doesn't feel right to let him live here the way you do. Take him out back and just shoot him. We feel pretty good when we rescue a dog, don't we? Right? We feel like heroes. Meanwhile, there's two types of shelters in the country. There's shelters for dogs. The Humane Society. Shelters for people. Halfway house. Not even a whole house. Half a house. And then we rescue from the other one. We grab a dog, we bring him home, and we wash him, and we fix him. We bring him to bed, and we pet him, and we hold him. Take him for a walk. And then we walk around a human that's laid out on the sidewalk to pick up from the dog that we rescued. What's wrong with that picture? Why don't we rescue from the other place? Just go in there, I'll take that guy. Bring him out. Take him home, give him a steak and a shave, a little corduroy bed in the corner. Come on, Freckles, let's take a walk. It's Dennis. I told you my name's Dennis. Freckles! Come on, let's go outside. Been outside a lot. Kind of want to stay inside for a while. Your friend comes over. He's cute. What is he? I think he's Dutch.
That was Greg Fitzsimmons with a piece called A Humane Society, taken from his album Life on Stage. Now to tell us about the one-year anniversary of First Saturday Celebration, let's welcome Director of the Hillsborough County Pet Services Center, Scott Trebatusky, back to Talking Animals. Good morning, Scott.
Good morning, Duncan. How are you?
Great. Thanks for joining me again on Talking Animals. In fact, it's been a little over a year, I guess, just a hair over that, since you joined me here in studio not long after starting the job overseeing what had been called the Hillsborough County Animal Services, now the Pet Resource Center. So I want to invite you back at some point in for a longer conversation for a follow-up, really, to things we discussed then and how it's been going since. But in a nutshell, how is it going, would you say?
It's been going great. You know, last year, over 13,000 positive outcomes of animals finding new homes and rescues and other ways to get out of the shelter alive, which is a new milestone for this county.
Okay, so by the numbers, it sounds very, very good. Like I say, we'll find out a time down the road not too far and really have you come in and chat more specifically. But tell me now at the moment about the big shebang slated for August 1st.
So a year ago, we started every first Saturday of the month. We have a special event, kind of a carnival atmosphere with different themes in order to get people to come in and see the new things that are going on and get animals adopted. So this upcoming Saturday, we're going to have another one of those first Saturdays. It'll be our one-year anniversary. We've probably gotten more than 2,000 animals adopted during this event over the course of a year. We're going to focus on some of the issues that are coming into the, pardon the term, dog days of summer, where you've got the heat in cars and some issues like that. And we're going to do some demonstrations, talk about how you can see signs of dogs in distress. Again, reemphasizing, you know, kids and dogs should not be in cars in Florida because the heat gets going really quickly.
Well, because these are important messages, I'm going to let the dog days of summer thing slide, Scott.
All right, thank you.
Yeah. So what else might people find? It sounds like there's kind of a fun sort of carnival atmosphere, and so there's a bounce house, if I'm not mistaken. I think music, refreshments.
Yeah. We have some food vendors. We have other rescues that come and bring the dogs in addition to what we have. We are going to actually have a fire truck out here to help us get our message out. So people who want to come and see a fire truck, bring their kids and see a fire truck up close. We've got a DJ, and we're actually going to have free anniversary cake for anybody who wants to come out and help us celebrate the first year first Saturday event.
Wow. Sounds, the cake, I think, is definitely going to close the deal for a lot of people. But how many adoptable pets will there be available on the first?
There will be between 300 and 400 pets available for adoption.
Wow. Wow, wow.
A big selection.
Yeah, so that's great. So let's just review the details. So, again, this is a week from Saturday, August 1st, from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. at Hillsborough County Pet Resource Center, which, again, is on 440 North Falconwood Road on Tampa. And the website is HillsboroughCounty.org/pets. And it sounds like it's going to be a great celebration and great opportunity for people to bring some animals into their home.
Well, thank you, Duncan. Yes, I appreciate it. This is a big help to us, and we want the community to come out and have fun. And I definitely look forward to doing your show again in the near future.
Yeah, we'll put that together soon. All right, Scott, thank you so much for joining us today on Talking Animals.
Okay, thank you.
Bye-bye. I'm Duncan Strauss, and you're listening to Talking Animals, where the show website is talkinganimals.net. It's time to proceed to Name That Animal Tune. This is a giveaway, but please only participate if you haven't won something from WMNF in the last 90 days. And there'll be a prize, a pair of tickets to see Sit, Stay, Ride, the Store of America's Sidecar Dogs. Again, the WMNF screening is next Tuesday, July 28th, at Tampa Picture Show. It's the Florida premiere, no less. $10. The theater has full bar, restaurant, what's not to like, veggie burgers added to the menu. Anyway, so the first person who calls 813-239-9663 and correctly identifies this animal song, it's Name That Animal Tune on Talking Animals.
We are.
All right, it might be a give me. We got a few folks calling in. Let's see. Hi, you're on Talking Animals. You're on the air. Can you name that animal tune? Hello, it's you. Hi, can you name that animal tune?
I want to be your dog.
What's that?
I want to be your dog.
That's exactly right. What is your name?
Janine.
What is it?
Janine.
Okay, I think on a weak connection. Is it Janine?
Yes.
Okay, I'm going to come back and get your information, but you are correct. It's Iggy and the Stooges.
Awesome.
I want to be your dog, and we'll send you off to see a screening of Sit, Stay, Ride, the Story of America's Sidecar Dogs next Tuesday at Tampa Picture Show. Stay on hold, Janine, and we'll get your info.
Thank you.
All right, folks, we do have a winner. Thank you so much. And I hope you'll, without the free tickets, you'll come see the screening. We have just about reached the end of today's edition of Talking Animals on WMF Tampa. Rob Laurie is up next with what amounts to 2 hours of radioactivity. I'll be back next Wednesday with another edition of Talking Animals. I hope you'll join me for that. Also, hope you'll visit our website, talkinganimals.net. We make available all sorts of information, archives, podcasts, the whole shebang. And I'm Duncan Strauss. Thanks very much for listening. Have a good week. Be kind, animals. Be kind, others. Be kind, yourself. We're closing out today's show with another dog song. That's right. This one from David Dondero. It's Not Everybody Loves Your Doggy Like You Do on WMNF, Tampa, Brandon, Clearwater, Largo, WeekyWatchy, and Beyond Community Conscious Radio. Thanks for listening. Speak again next Wednesday at 10 a.m. on Talking Animals. And next Tuesday, in for Joyce on It's the Music at 1 p.m. Thanks.
Not everybody loves your doggie like you do. It's annoying when you're saying, hey, look how cute. I don't think that the dog is as smart as you think. I think that the dog is smarter than you. It's true. Smarter than you. It's true. Stand with a baggie full of dog crap in your hand. You plan to let him off his leash, oh, but then he ran. Where'd he go? Your fuzzy little friend with a tail that wags. Where'd he go? Guess he just left you holding the bag. It's true. Smarter than you. Say please come back. You get a Scooby snack. You try, but he don't come back, 'cause he joined a wolf pack. He's gone. He's out running wild. He's howling at the moon. Long gone. Broke out of the jail that you call your bedroom. It's true. Smarter than you.